From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Hunter Deucing, and joining me, eating some tofu vindaloo down in the wild outback of Australia, there is Mr. Stuart Bulk. Say hello, Stu.
Hello, Stu, with the tofu
vindaloo.
It's very nice, actually.
Yeah. Hanging out with nothing to do, eating chicken vindaloo. Anyway, and in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado, we have John Grace. Say hello, John.
Hey. Yep, I'm here.
Hey, yep. Using
my real name.
Yeah. The movie we are talking about today is Fletch from 1985, directed by Michael Ritchie, written by Andrew Bergman, based on the novel by Gregory MacDonald. Series of novels. Kind of quirky detective novels. And starring Chevy Chase, also known as Cornelius Crane Chase. You know? I never realized that was his name. Cornelius.
He should have gone with that.
He sounds like a character from a Washington Irving novel, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so Fletch, this is one, my history with it, you know, I was 1 year old when this movie came out, so, you know, I didn't see it for many years.
Wow.
But I remember when, I was, you know, young and stupid, I liked Kevin Smith movies a lot.
Your age you are now and stupid, right?
Yes. Now I'm old and stupid. Not even old now. I'm middle-aged and stupid. I don't know.
I'm still watching Kevin Smith movies.
Yeah, I watched Jay and Silent Bob reboots, so clearly I have learned nothing. But at least I know it's bad. But, I remember hearing that one of his projects he was going to do for a long time was an adaptation of Fletch 1. And it was going to, that film he had in development for a long time before it finally died. It was going to have like Jason Lee. And I think when I read about it, Jason Lee was attached. And I remember there were references to Fletch. She still got my copy of Fletch in his movies.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I need to check out Fletch. And so I actually read the book first. And then I saw the film with Chevy Chase. And I remember enjoying it quite a bit, but John, I think you picked this movie. Why'd you pick it?
Well, I saw it back in 1985, and I saw it as it was the first film I saw as a preview screening, because back then Universal really believed in doing preview screenings a month before release, thinking that good word of mouth would help the box office. So they would do a Saturday night, advanced screening. Just to the general public, just to get the word of mouth going. And I think the last movie they did that with real strongly was American Pie, of all things. They were doing advanced screenings like crazy.
That movie had Boston area. I was a freshman in high school when that movie came out, and it was all everybody was talking about. Like that's
right, right. Ball. And they did tons of free screenings, and I would always get passes for them because people would just hand them to me, and I didn't want to go see it. So I would hand them to coworkers and stuff when I was, office temping and everything. And I was just like, here, go see this movie. I don't want to see it. And I hated going to those screenings in Boston because they tended to be standing room only or, totally overbooked. They gave out too many passes.
And you have to be in a theater with people from Boston. That's another problem.
Exactly. And that's always a problem. And but this, I had read a lot of the Fletch sequel novels. I had not read the original Fletch novel when I saw this. So, which is, it's okay because the books are completely out of any sort of chronological order. Like, Gregory MacDonald pulled a George Lucas and wrote, like, the fifth story of Fletch first or something.
Fletch 1, the one Kevin Smith was going to do, is a prequel.
One is the first Fletch adventure, yeah.
Yeah, it's like right. Him in college. So, it was kind of a way of not having to use Chevy Chase again, you know, when they made.
Well, at one point he was going to do a Fletch, like an original Fletch story set in New Jersey with Chevy Chase as Fletch.
Chevy and Chase then, is working at the Quick Stop.
And then, yeah, I don't know, but Fletch, well, Chevy Chase then was complaining because I saw the script for sale at the at a store in Cambridge, but I never picked it up or anything. I don't like Kevin Smith's screenwriting. Chevy Chase was claiming that he had problems in meetings with Kevin Smith, and Kevin Smith was flaky. It was a lot of the same problems you constantly hear about Kevin Smith from other
like,
sources.
Like and, when Adam Carolla had his big blow up with him.
Yeah, yeah.
That.
It sounded just like that. His complaint sounded, and you know, the rep at the time, Chevy's always had a bad reputation anyway.
Oh,
so
everybody
believed Kevin Smith.
Yeah, yeah. No, Chevy Chase has always had a reputation for being difficult to work with, for being hostile. Like that email,
right.
That voicemail he left for Dan Harmon went viral.
I never heard it.
he's like being really hostile to him. It was kind of around when Dan Harmon left Community.
Right, right. And then then Smith redid the script where it was Fletch 1 being adapted, and then Jason Lee would play Fletch, and Chevy would do the narration. And then it became Son of Fletch, because Greg McDonald wrote that novel where Fletch has a son, and then that went nowhere, and then it was going to be Ben Affleck as Fletch, and then the rights, you know, went somewhere else. Harvey Weinstein lost the rights, and they went to another studio, and then they were going to do it with Zach Braff as Fletch. Now they're talking about Jason Sudeikis as Fletch. I don't get the point. It's just like newspaper men don't mean the same thing that they were in the 80s. There's no point in doing Fletch now. And unfortunately, you know, well, actually a good thing in some ways, Chevy Chase really is the movie Fletch. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the movie version. He's not like the one in the book. The Fletch in the book is a complete bastard. He's actually really unlikable.
Well, yeah, I was going to say when I saw the film, I don't remember much of the book, but I remember that Fletch is not like, he's not a likable character really. And so
no,
I saw the film and
he's
kind
just
of
less evil than everybody else.
So he's,
yeah,
so it's kind of a realistic depiction of a journalist then.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And Gregory McDonald had been a journalist, and Fletch was probably responsible for me wanting to be a journalist. Night Stalker is also because I like that idea of being a reporter and everything, and was a reporter for about a year, and then realized that wasn't for me. I was being inspired by works from a time when reporters may have actually made money.
Stu, what about you and Fletch? Are you a fan of this movie from way back? Is this your first time seeing it?
That's the first time for me.
Oh, really? Had you heard anything about it? Were you familiar with, you know, had you heard stuff about it or curious about it?
Oh, of course. Yeah. It was very popular. It was very popular over here. I remember it doing some big bucks. But the thing was, I was never much a Chevy Chase fan. Just never really saw him as that funny. I think there's one or two films I really do like, and Foul Play is one of them. I really like that a lot. The one he did with Goldie Hawn back in 70. No, John, 78.
78.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of his early ones. And, oh, God, what's the other one? Was it Funny Farm? I think I enjoy Funny Farm as well.
Oh, yeah, the George Roy Hill film. Yeah, my dad really liked that film because he said it's a pretty accurate depiction of, like, Vermont. He was, and, like, the people out there.
I remember liking it, but I have not seen it since I rented it. But I remember I always considered that the other good Chevy Chase movie.
I've actually got it on Blu-ray. I forgot I bought it. It came with a double of Spies Like Us. I'm like, oh, it was only like $10 at the time, but I'll pick it up. And it got shoved on the shelf and just forgot all about the fact I had. I'm like, oh, that's right. Yeah, Funny Farm and Spies Like Us. I think he's in Spies Like Us as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
I enjoyed that too. Yeah. Fletch is one of those ones. I mean, it was always around on VHS or it was, you know, kind of DVD release. But I just thought, nah. I don't know. I don't know if it's through a nearly 2-hour Chevy Chase film or him just.
It was a popular rental and cable TV movie. I think because it's very rewatchable. in terms of it's so layered with jokes and it's pretty much nonstop. You can watch it repeatedly on cable and not get tired of it.
Unless the bike.
Well, so, but John, you were saying that this movie, it doesn't, it's the movie Fledge. And
yeah,
when I watched this film, I really felt like it was part of the sort of snobs versus slobs milieu of late 70s through the 80s. Like films like Animal House, and the presence of Tim Matheson yeah. certainly helps. Caddyshack, like 1941.
Meatballs,
Stripes. Yeah.
Right.
It really feels like it fits into that milieu because, like, Fletch is sort of this slob. Like, he's LARPing as a homeless junkie at the beginning of the film. And, right. And he's.
They're never called homeless, they're just called junkies.
Oh, okay.
Just
called
beach bum junkies. Because they didn't have a homeless problem back then, apparently.
Well, you know, that's a whole nother can of fish. But, So he gets approached by this rich businessman played by Tim Matheson, and he asks him, "What's your name?" "Ted Nugent." "My name is Nugent. Ted Nugent."
A joke that's funnier. I think I said it on the show before. That joke is funnier now than it was back then.
Yeah, it is.
Because Ted Nugent means a lot more than he did in 1985.
Yes. But this guy approaches Fletch thinking he's a beach bum, and he offers him a big bundle of money to come into his house in a few days and murder him. He says he's dying of cancer, and this would be a mercy killing, and he'll give him a bunch of money and a ticket to Rio if he does it. And Fletch, being a reporter, unbeknownst to this guy, decides to do some digging. And he was on the beach because he was working on a story on cops pushing drugs. And so he starts to dig into this case, too, and finds out that they are actually connected. And that, of course, the guy doesn't want to be murdered, and that there's more sinister games afoot. But there's a lot of kind of him putting on disguises, him playing these different characters and doing different bits. You can tell Chevy Chase is kind of improvising a lot during it.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think it's one of, like, before we were starting the show, John, you said that Chevy Chase usually, he's kind of known for playing the same role like Clark Griswold and everything. But this is a film
Or people think he does.
Yeah. And in this film, he's more of the kind of jerky Chevy Chase, who's kind of a wise guy, a smart ass, you know, kind of character.
Right. Well, what you'll notice is, and this is something that I always picked up on, is Fletch never believes anything anybody tells him. He never takes it at face value. He questions, he checks out everything they say. Like, the movie consists of him, the way he unravels the mystery or whatever. It's like, he finds the guy's doctor, he sneaks to the office, he impersonates another doctor just to look at the files. He'll get into these situations just to find the most minuscule amount of information that actually leads him to figuring everything out. He doesn't believe anybody, anything they tell him. Like, through the whole film, you can just see him just second-guessing everybody.
It sounds like me. I don't believe anybody.
Well, I told Stu the Earth was round, and he was like, "Nope, it's flat."
But that's the thing, is like, it's the reporting. You know, back then, reporters were supposed to follow rules. Like, you got to find two sources for everything. They don't follow any of these rules anymore. It's
no.
Just
well,
basically...
now a reporter is propagandist. You know,
journalists now make stories out of Twitter. You know, Twitter activity. It's ridiculous.
Well,
they don't do
so
any
many stories
and this
that are
is
just,
from a time when
yeah there's so many stories on the internet that are just here's a bunch of tweets. It's like
yeah, exactly. Oh yeah, it's the new hack writing. We just make a story out of everybody's tweets. Trump said this at a rally, let's report it without irony, or you know, out of context, so you'll think he said it literally.
I can't tell you how many stories I see.
And dummies believe this stuff when they read it. They don't know to question the media, but this is from an era when reporters, I guess it was the tail end of the whole all the president's men type attitude towards reporters, but this is from a time when, you know, you had investigative journalists doing stuff. Now you have to depend on these kind of egomaniacs on Twitter to actually do these type of reports. It's ridiculous.
And one of the problems with modern journalism, I think, is that back in the day, it was about putting together a story that had a narrative and it informed you of something, but it was also good to read. Now, all these people are blue checks on Twitter, and it's all about my brand. I'm building my brand.
Right.
It's all about me.
Right.
It's all about me. You know, I'm promoting myself. It's not about the story.
It's editorial writing. It's editorial writing. That's what it is. That's called editorial writing. And nobody does any reporting anymore. And, you know, I don't like the Joe Rogan podcast thing. I think Joe Rogan's kind of dumb. But if you watch that podcast on YouTube, they will often talk about stuff that you wonder why the modern journalists are not covering these stories.
Right.
And the same thing with you know, the one guy on Fox, Tucker Carlson, will talk about stuff you will never see in any mainstream. And people have to go to these kind of weird off-brand sources to see any discussion of this.
Yeah, well, it's like, it was like
a journalist. That's why.
Go ahead, Stu. What?
Yeah.
I didn't hear that.
Tucker Carlson is what I'd actually class as a real journalist.
Well, he did that great bit on Paul Singer and Cabela's and Vulture Capitalism. Like, he went after a top Republican donor who's a real piece of crap, and you don't see leftist outlets covering that stuff because gives the game away that it's all just one big thing. But but it's just, you know, it's rare that you see something that's actually exposing something real and not just imagined his paranoia and hysteria. But you know, in a previous age, you know, the story what was in the paper, and you know, a journalist might get the Pulitzer or get some sort of prize, but you weren't like your own celebrity, and you didn't have your own publishing outlet on social media where your every thought could be broadcast.
Right. And the gag here is he doesn't even write under his own name.
He writes under Jane Doe.
which they only did, I think, just to give an extra joke. You know, you've probably seen my work under the name. It's not any for real no reason like that. I don't know of any reporter that wrote under a name like that.
No, I mean, there was like advice columnists and stuff like that that would have kind of gimmicky names like
but there's just a line where Joe Don Baker's evil Chief Carlson like grabs it, or should I call you Jane Doe, or he says a line like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it throws Fletch off for a minute, like he loses his cool and he kind of panics when the chief knows his name, you know, his byline in the paper. Stuff like that, I don't think it's like expecting Dear Abby to bust like a big investigative story.
Yeah, and Joe Don Baker plays the villainous police chief, probably the most over the top evil cop I've seen in a movie.
Oh yeah, but it gives Chevy Chase a great line where he says, an actual serious line, you can't just kill a reporter.
Yeah,
and then Baker does the whole thing, pull out the switchblade. Oh, I just stabbed myself a few times and say, I shot you in self-defense. This is before all the negative publicity on the LAPD, by the way, when they were, you know, which really escalated in the 90s and led to the LA riots.
But speaking of Joe Don Baker, let's talk about the cast a little bit. We've got Tim Matheson. People recognize him from Animal House. We've got M. Emmett Walsh. George Wendt as Fat Sam. Somebody totally forgot was in this movie was Gina Davis as Larry.
Yeah, she was just a sitcom bit player at the time, so they put her in the movie.
I love your body, Larry. The lady's looking at him.
And you know the character was only named that just so Chevy could have that line in the hotel.
Yes. Yes. And you also got Larry Flash Jenkins, which I remember him from, like, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. He was the sort of crazy black junkie in the beach. Just, he's one of those guys you see pop up in a lot of 80s movies, kind of character actor.
Yeah.
You
got the uncle from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is one of the cops that's, that takes him to the chief.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That was
he
him.
He blows a kiss at him or whatever. You have your right to have your ball stopped dead by him, and then he blows a kiss at him.
So Stu, this was your first time seeing the movie. What were some of your initial reacts to it?
Wait, were we covering The Boys from Brazil tonight? I forgot.
What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you?
I don't know. Something's riled them up. They're barking at something. I have no idea. They're in the other room.
What did you say?
I was saying, like, what were some initial reactions you had to this film? Because it's your first time seeing it.
I don't know. It sort of just played in the background for me. I mean, I watched it, but I was flipping around my phone as well while it was on. I was like, I'm bored. I just didn't. I don't know. I think intuitively, I just knew that this was not going to be the sort of thing that I was going to sort of watch or want to watch over and over again. And I mean, I gave it a shot, but I just didn't really care much for it. I don't care much for Chevy Chase. He just, you know, apart from the films I mentioned and European Vacation as well. I don't care much for the first Vacation or the others, but European Vacation, for some reason, I really enjoy. There's not really much about him as well, about him that I like. So I put it on, hoping to like this one. And, you know, there's some good gags in there. But, yeah, I roll. Just kind of, this is there.
You know, I get not liking Chevy Chase. I mean, he's not my favorite, but I mean, I like him okay, but this movie, I think, is one of his better films. Did you at least like the Harold Faltermeyer soundtrack?
Yes, yeah.
Very Beverly Hills Cop. You know, and that's another thing, too, speaking of Kevin Smith, was I think, like, Cop Out is the terrible cop movie, like, sort of, you know, that type of thing he eventually made. So he got Harold Faltermeyer to do the music for it.
That made me glad he didn't do a Fletch movie because it would have been so low energy. That was so awful.
I never
that
saw
that.
That
was one
Cop
of the worst
out.
Films I've ever seen. Don't ever see it. It's so bad. It's unbelievably terrible.
Which one, Cop Out?
Yes.
Yeah, it's Bruce Willis and Tracy Morgan and Sean William Scott.
Oh.
I was stunned it got released. I'm surprised I didn't dump it on video quietly, like, you know, a year later.
Like, Bruce Willis these days looks bored in his films. He's just phoning it in. This looks like he's been warmed up, you know, like death warmed up. Well, he looks me out of here.
He's kind of like he's kind of like Harrison Ford, where if he'll do a project, but if it doesn't excite him, he's not going to try. And
he's bored with his work.
And one thing that was one of the movies where Kevin Smith was like, jumped. He was throwing Bruce Willis under the bus, saying, you know, oh, the movie's bad because Bruce Willis didn't work with me. But part of it is you're just a bad director, Kevin. You know, you've got the Askew universe, whatever the hell it's called.
Mm-hmm. You really can't do much outside that.
No, he can't. Nothing he's done outside of it has really stuck, you know. And even Jay and Silent Bob reboot is too. It exists only to give his daughter a platform. I think
he's still doing that. My God.
Yeah. No. She's. That was another that Yoga Hosers didn't take. So I think he went back to the Jay and Silent Bob. Well, I think he only did it to. Put her in a movie. I think he thought if I put her in a film with Jay and Silent Bob, people will watch it because nobody watched Yoga Hosers.
Well, with Jay and Silent Bob, the reboot one, and they're so old these days,
Jay wouldn't be able to last. He'd be dead of a heroin overdose by this time.
Well, and
back,
you know, yeah. Man,
he's three with a 394. The first one, he was still a young kid, so he was mildly entertaining in it. I actually thought he was quite funny. Both of them were, but now they're in their what, late 40s. You think he'd have track marks all over his arms? He'd be, yeah.
Well, and you know, when you watch Jay and Silent Bob reboot, I mean, Kevin Smith has not taken good care of himself over the years. He's had a heart attack, but he looks really good in the film because he's lost so much weight.
And that's the problem. Jay, Silent Bob's a big guy.
I was going to say, Jason Mewes has done a lot of drugs and has done a lot of damage to himself, and it shows, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like he has new teeth. You know when people look like they have new teeth? Like they lost all their teeth and they put new ones in? He's got these, like, fake weird teeth. Like, he looks like Adam Sandler in Uncut Gems or something.
What a comparison.
Yeah, I know. You didn't expect that. First time that...
Yeah, I didn't. That was a reach.
Yeah. Well, Adam Sandler acts with his teeth in that film.
Jason Mewes needed to get off the drugs and eat properly. That's what his problem was. And if he had accepted Lofidoli's tortilla, he would have been on the right path. But
exactly.
He refused it.
That's what happened. So, anyway.
The super tortilla.
So, So, you know, the film, though, John, you know, was based on the Gregory MacDonald book. And it was, you know, like Kevin Smith had his Fletch movie in development for a long time. But this movie went through a lot of development issues as well. I believe you said MacDonald wrote a script for it that was never filmed.
He wrote a script that was probably too close to the book. Writers tend to do that. You know, when a novelist writes a screenplay based on his work, he, you know, basically tries to put the book in the screenplay.
They ignore
the rules
of filmmaking,
right?
You know,
and they write a very uncinematic screenplay, you know. And he had, I think at one point it was Charles Grodin was the closest it came to actually happening before Chevy Chase, of all people. But I guess Grodin had some heat on him in the 70s as a leading man in a comedy.
I reckon with Charles Grodin, I would have preferred it.
Well, it would have been a 70s Charles Grodin, it might have been interesting. It would have been interesting to see it happen. I don't think it would have been a hit or anything, because he had done some straight crime dramas too at the time. I'm blanking on the one he did with Trevor Howard that was decent, based on a Gerald Brown novel of all things. Grodin was the closest to Jagger. Actually had an option at one point because a record company he was signed to wanted to get into the film business, and they bought the rights. They had it for like 3 years. Burt Reynolds was rejected by MacDonald. I guess he somehow had a clause. Actor. Yeah. Chargers for the Underhills. But when Chase got it, I think it was attached with Michael Ritchie, and they had Andrew Bergman do a new script, and then combine the two villains in the novel into one conspiracy, because in the novel, Alan Stanwyck has nothing to do with Chief Carlson's drug ring on the beach. But he tied them together. So it made more sense to have Chief Carlson, you know, in the room with them in the finale. In the novel, Chief Carlson is chasing Fletch into Stanwyck's house and fires into it or whatever. So it's a bit different. And he also had a lot of the humor and I think the disguises. And then Phil Alden Robinson did an uncredited rewrite, but he put a lot of stuff in there. And I find it interesting that Chevy Chase always claims that he improvised a lot of the dialogue, because I found a script online that was the Bergman, Phil Alden Robinson draft that was probably like the second or third draft. And a lot of those jokes were in there, like Ted Nugent and that sort of stuff. That was already there. So I think Chase is probably exaggerating what he improvised. I think he improvised a lot of the physical comedy, like the way there's a running gag where he's constantly bumping his head because he's too tall. And it's something you only notice if you've seen the movie too many times like I have. But it's like he walks into the lamp in the Sally Ann Kavanaugh's home or whatever, and he's suddenly has the lamp on his head. It's like a weird improv moment, and it's like I think he put a lot of that in. They put him in jail, he bumps his head on the jail cell door. You know, it's just like that's the sort of stuff I think he actually improvised, because a lot of the dialogue that's in the film seemed to be in that script that I found online. And Phil Alden Robinson has no on-screen credit for it, but I think he wrote a lot of that stuff.
You know what's the best Jagger movie ever made?
Mick Jagger?
Yeah.
Performance.
No, that was terrible.
Free Jack?
Free Jack. Yes.
I knew it.
Really?
I never saw it.
You never saw it? It's good fun.
No.
He was supposed to be in Fitzcarraldo.
Oh, yes, he was.
Oh, shit, really?
Yeah, he was supposed to co-star with the main character was going to be played by Bruce Dern. The Fitzcarraldo was going to be played by Bruce Dern. And then Mick Jagger had to drop out, and so I think Herzog rewrote the film and wrote his character out. Because he was like, if I'm not going to use Mick Jagger, I just don't want to use that character. And so he wrote that character out, and then eventually Bruce Dern was recast with Klaus Kinski. But there's footage of it. They started shooting. If you watch Burden of Dreams, you can see some scenes with Bruce Dern and Mick Jagger that they shot for the film.
Weird.
Speaking of Bruce Dern, he's still alive. So my premonition did not come to fruition from last week.
Yeah, nobody's died that we put on our Deadpool.
Oh, that's all. We spin the wheel. We spin the MMC death wheel again later on the end of the episode. Right? I've got one.
Top pick. Chevy Chase. He's dead. He's going to die. Jordan
Baker. I got one. I'm pretty sure. I'm going to predict we will not last the year out, at least, but we'll get to it later.
All right.
Spin the wheel of death. All right.
Anyway, but I completely lost where we were.
It's so bored me. I'm sorry. It's so bored me. I'm just going to say it now.
So,
I really have to say about it.
I mean, I think it's – I don't think this movie is like some masterpiece or anything, but I think it's a fun 80s like detective comedy. You know, like it's a movie like when I watched it, I've seen it twice now, and both times I was just like, this is like light fun. You know, I just enjoy it. You know, you can put it on and do something all in the background and get some laughs. You know, it's got that 80s score. You know, it's just, I don't know, I just enjoyed it.
Which was a replacement score.
Really?
The first score was by Tom Scott. Yeah, if you watch the trailer on the DVD, there's a jazz score on the trailer, and in the credits it says music by Tom Scott. But I think because Beverly Hills Cop was such a runaway hit just half a year earlier, they immediately had like Harold Faltermeyer hired to rescore it to make it more hip.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's like... It's funny because I found a Blu-ray forum discussion where they were saying, what if Shout gets the rights to Fletch? And they said, well, they should put in the version with the Tom Scott score, because I'd watch that. And
yeah, like, no, you know, I'd totally...
I don't think it still exists, but I'd watch it.
Yeah, if they did something like that, shoot, I'd buy it, you know, to see what it felt like.
Because otherwise there's no reason to do Fletch as a Shout Factory thing, because Chevy Chase will not do DVD commentary or anything. He won't even do an interview. Unless you pay him like a fortune or something, right. So
well, that was like Schwarzenegger.
That's
was
above
that
the budget of just about any company.
Yeah, no, they want you to do it for free. That's what Harlan Ellison was ranting about that when they wanted him to do Babylon 5 features for free, and he was like, "You have to pay me."
Right, and that showed what an idiot he was, because it's like, okay, you're a writer, nobody reads your work anymore. Maybe it's a good way to promote yourself to these sci-fi nerds who don't know who you are, except the guy who wrote that Star Trek one time, and he blew it. He had a chance at free advertising, basically.
Right, and it's you know, it was an interview he already did.
Yelling at a secretary.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, Jesus Christ, it's like, do you know how to promote your work? And then no wonder nobody reads you.
Well,
he's already dead. He's already dead, so he can't be in the Deadpool. So
yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, picture of she's wearing this fat woman wearing a t-shirt says it's got a picture of a cat in it. It says, "Sorry, I can't. I have plans with my cat." What the fuck is he doing? Oh, sorry.
Well, so one thing about the movie that was kind of bizarre to me was the basketball stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So there's, like, this scene where, like, he's watching basketball, and then Chevy Chase is running around in an afro playing basketball with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah, he's having a daydream that he's in the Lakers. Lakers were the hottest team on that side of the country at the time. It was every year the NBA playoffs was basically Lakers versus Celtics every year. And because I remember watching some games one summer. And so they, part of the deleted scenes, they had shot Fletch having these different sports team fantasies. Like he's Dodgers and he gets pulled by Tommy Lasorda. That actually links into the joke where he punches the picture of Tommy Lasorda and the chief in his office. He says, "I hate Tommy Lasorda," because he'd had a daydream that was deleted from the final cut.
Oh, yeah.
That he was playing for the apparently, there's also one where he's on a hockey team because he's wearing a hockey uniform on the poster. And they have some stills that survive, but none of the footage was kept. Like, they just didn't hold on to footage and just had it destroyed. So you could have had these bonus scenes on a DVD, and they don't have anything. All they have is that, you know, this making of documentary where they interview all the bit players, which is fine because they add some interesting stuff. Like, okay, you know the inn where they're on the beach in Brazil? Mm-hmm. And they actually are in Rio de Janeiro, but they said the week they booked to go down there and shoot that scene, and they begged for Universal to send them down there to Rio to film that, it was raining every day. And in the script, it was like, you know, they're supposed to be on the beach with all these, you know, Brazilians and bathing suits and stuff. It was supposed to be like a wild beach scene. Nope, it was just raining. Nobody was at the beach. They had to keep running out when the skies cleared and just to film that. You'll notice it's dark and cloudy in Brazil.
Interesting.
When they're filming it. And they said, we could have done that shot in Malibu. You know, it was such a waste. But they said, but we did enjoy our trip to Rio. You know?
That's pretty funny.
Here's another funny thing. Dana Wheeler Nicholson, I did not know this, she is the daughter of Malcolm Wheeler Nicholson, the founder of DC Comics.
Really?
Yeah, but he didn't own DC Comics after a few years. Apparently he was ousted in a stock, you know, sort of scam or swindle. Mm. So she was swindled out of the DC Comics fortune.
Ouch.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Of him with Kobe Bryant in an air helicopter.
If they did it now, yeah, Jason Sudeikis, we would have done a scene with Kobe.
Yep, exactly.
Which I don't know if they would still do the Lakers thing, because that's not in the books. It was just something added in by Andrew Bergman.
I was going to say, that seems like an Andrew Bergman thing. It doesn't. I don't remember that in the books.
Now, Fletch is not a sports fan in the books. He's not anything. He's kind of a weird cipher for cynicism and, you know, skeptical reporter. He's not really, there's not much to his personality. He's a dick. He's like a smart ass, but he's not Chevy Chase's character.
They
movie.
Make him a lovable smart ass in this movie. Like he's like, right, right. You know, he's a character from
sticking it to the man.
Yeah, exactly. He's Rodney Dangerfield in Caddyshack, you know.
Right, right. Or Chevy Chase and Caddyshack.
Yeah, Chevy Chase and Caddyshack. Yeah, there you go. But not Caddyshack 2.
No, which I've never seen.
Oh, it's, you know, I saw it ages ago.
I've seen Caddyshack 1. Never seen it.
Really?
No.
I think it's kind of overrated, personally, but I don't know.
Caddyshack, the original? Yeah. I don't care for it.
I saw it once or twice and just, you know, didn't grab me the way some of those other movies did.
No, there's people who love it. I just don't get it.
Oh, yeah, it's, you know, there's people who think Bill Murray's gives his best, that's like the funniest thing he's ever done, and The Gopher and stuff. But as far as Harold Ramis goes, like, he's way better. He's done way better stuff. So with Fletch, is there anything else? I've kind of exhausted a lot of the stuff I have to say about it. Other than the sort of the side of journalism, the basketball stuff. I mean, are there any other big holes I'm missing, John, with this that you need to enlighten me with?
Andrew Bergman had said in an interview that the plan was Chevy would do a Fletch movie every 3 years, sort of like that would be like his James Bond series.
Right.
And he said, but they screwed up when they did the sequel, Fletch Lives.
Oh, yeah, we have to bring that up, yeah.
Yeah, he had written a screenplay based on Fletch and the Man Who, And I remember seeing articles in Steranko's preview talking about they were going to start filming that soon because the first Fletch was a big success. It was an $8 million movie that made $60 million at the box office. And, you know, it's so that was a huge hit back then. That's all you needed. You didn't have to have a $300 million hit to have a sequel. And so they did Fletch Lives, but they filmed it when there was a writer's strike. So they had to use the script of a guy willing to, I think, you know, be a strike breaker, Leon Capitanos, I think was his name. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't based on any of the McDonald novels. And it was like an original story of Fletch inheriting a home in Mississippi. And it's okay. It's entertaining. Obviously, a lot of it is Chevy Chase doing improv.
It looks a lot more funny. Disguise. It's, I've never seen it, but it looks a lot more disguise heavy. Like they go a lot.
Yeah. They took the things, the popcorn moments from the first Fletch and expanded on them. It is different enough from the first film where it's not a ripoff like an Austin Powers sequel where they're just doing the same jokes, you know, except doing them bigger and grosser or whatever.
Like
that, which is always a problem with sequels when they just redo stuff from the first
comedy
film.
Sequels always do that where it's just, oh, let, you know, Weekend at Bernie's 2, you know, Hangover 2.
And they
2.
Didn't do that here. Yeah, they didn't do it here. They actually went for a lot of politically incorrect humor and jokes you probably couldn't make in a movie now. When you see it, you'll know what I'm talking about. Had they done the Andrew Bergman and Fletch and the Man Who script, I think it would have been better remembered and we'd have more sequels. But it opened well, and it was like a surprise hit. Like everybody... You know, the industry was pretending they didn't know Fletch was this big cult hit on cable TV. They're like, oh, surprise, Fletch Lives is this big hit. And it's like, well, yeah, because everybody watches the thing on HBO every month. You know, it's we were expecting it. So It did well, but they didn't do a follow-up. And I don't know if it's because they couldn't get Michael Ritchie or Chevy Chase to agree to do another one or something. And Chase and Ritchie did another movie together, Cops and Robertsons, which I've never seen.
Oh, I saw that when I was a kid.
Chase
yeah.
and Jack. Yeah. And I think it was promoted as a kid's movie.
Yeah, it kind of was. I mean, I saw it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
And then when you had the Kevin Smith thing happened, and that basically just froze up the rights for years. And it was another thing where it's like, so you know, I'm now arguing for public domain for a lot of old characters that their creators are dead, that their stuff should just go in public domain, because otherwise you just have these studios sitting on stuff until it has no commercial value whatsoever. Doc Savage and The Shat are current examples, but yeah, nothing gets made. Nothing gets made. They just sit on the rights to this stuff forever.
It's not
so
Marvel
you haven't had
DC,
a Fletch movie in years,
you know,
right?
Who cares? Right.
Yeah, and who needs a Fletch movie now? Adults don't go see adult comedies of this material. Look how The Nice Guys flop because these things cost too damn much to make. Now they'd make Fletch today, it'd be an $80 million budget, and you wouldn't know where the money went. You know, I mean, Nice Guys had like a $60 million budget or something. I was like, what?
Wow. Yeah. Like,
come on.
Go into inflated actor fees or something.
It's got to be. They're hiding the money, or as Chris Rock said about the Blair Witch Project, somebody had a hell of a party.
Hollywood accounting is notoriously, secretive.
It's very creative. It's very, very inventive. Yeah. Fletch Lives, I think it's worth watching if it shows up on your streaming channel, but I wouldn't buy it.
You can get it on, like, because I have it on a 2-pack with Fletch, and, you know, it's like...
Yeah,
it's like,
that's an okay way to
see. You can get a DVD of Fletch for $5, or you can get both of them for $5. I mean, just get both of them, you know?
Yeah, I'd go for that.
I got the Jane Doe edition, you know?
Yeah, I actually have the Fletch soundtrack on vinyl.
Nice, I would get that.
Yeah. I have that on vinyl, and I also have I bought the CD that Varese Sarabande put out like a year ago, because that soundtrack was so rare for a long time. But the most annoying thing was sports radio shows would use it as bumper music constantly. So I said, all right, the soundtrack's out there. Just got to find it.
That's $3 as well on vinyl. I just saw before.
No, I wouldn't doubt it.
It does.
So let's go ahead and rate this thing. Stu, this was your first viewing. You didn't care for it. I'll let you go first.
I'll give it a 5.5. I mean, you probably think I was going to give less than that, but it was just there.
those who don't know, I'm actually in a shitload of pain. I've done a shoulder injury, so I'm not really enjoying much these days.
Yeah.
So you couldn't hear the Fix song playing in the soundtrack, what you're saying?
Probably heard it, but I heard the Johnny Farnham song. So I'm like, Johnny Farnham's on the fucking soundtrack? Give me a break. Yeah, so I was kind of holed up in bed watching this, going, oh, shit. So, I mean, once I'm healthy again, in God knows whoever that is, I'll give another watch. Fletch Lives, I have been told and has been mentioned, is not very good. That's readily available here on Blu-ray still. Fletch 1 is gone, disappeared, which I thought would be another way around.
Yeah, you wouldn't. That's weird.
Yeah.
I do like the poster for Fletch Lives, though, which is like the Gone with the Wind poster with him in the Clark Gable position, but he's got a gun shoved in his face.
Well, there's a Song of the South parody in the movie.
Oh, my goodness.
It's hysterical.
Oh my
it
gosh.
Got belly laughs when I saw it, you know, opening day. In Mississippi, like, people couldn't stop laughing at it.
Oh, man.
It wasn't filmed in Mississippi, of course, and it just has all these stereotypes of how they think Mississippi is in Hollywood. So it's just super laughable. And, of course, you got Arlie Emery as, like, a evangelical TV preacher, and Hal Holbrook is a pretentious Southerner and everything. It's I don't know. I'd have to watch it again. I haven't seen it in 30 years.
Well, I'd give it a 7. I think it's a solid 80s comedy cop, not cop, but a detective movie. Mm-hmm. John, what about you?
I give it an 8, and I will say two things about it. I think it's the best movie about journalism that I've seen, which would be a surprise to people who like more pretentious, serious fare.
Well, I think it's way better. A lot of movies about journalists lionize the profession, whereas this is a little, it's a comedy, but it's pretty matter of fact.
Yeah, you know, but to me, this is what a journalist should be. Somebody who questions everything he's told. Like, remember that moment in 60 Minutes where good old Mike Cernovich is being interviewed by Mike Wallace or whoever, and he said, why didn't you guys sick? And then Mike Wallace says, well, her campaign told us she was healthy. And he says, and you believed her campaign manager or whatever? And, you know, and then Mike Wallace is just stumped right there.
Yeah,
you believe them.
How dumb are you?
Right. And it's like, what I like about this movie is, like, he's the ideal journalist that no longer exists anywhere, from what I tell. And also, when I was watching the making of documentary and I picked up on this, they were talking to one of the producers and he said, well, he says the movie's not a noir, but it's like a 40s detective mystery comedy. He says, but we made it in the 80s. But it is. And that's probably my favorite Hollywood genre other than 50s westerns is like 40s mystery comedies, you know, The Thin Man and Charlie Chan, that sort of thing. You know, I love all of that stuff, all the imitations of The Thin Man that they did. Like, I love all of that 40s detective comedy stuff. Is just, that's my favorite, you know, junk food to watch on TV or comfort food, whatever you want to call it. Like, I go on Amazon Prime and I'll find every old black and white Monogram production and old Fox mystery film that I can find, you know, Mike Shane, whatever. It's definitely here. So I give it an 8.
Yep. It's definitely something that's up your alley. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
and it's the only good Chevy Chase movie. That's what I want to say.
Well, that's all I've got for this week, guys. Anything to add before we go?
Yeah, I've got to spin the wheel.
Oh, spin the wheel, Stu.
My weekly, actually, I'm going to give my yearly prediction. This man will not see out the year. I'm going to go with Vince Neil. I don't think he's going to last.
You think the new Motley Crue tour is going to do him in?
I think it'll be the death of him, literally, in the end.
Mm. Well, Chubba beat, Vince.
If it doesn't, we're going to have some funny, funny videos on our group.
Just yeah, that's the thing memes. Is, I want the memes to keep coming, you know?
Yeah. He's got another 5 years of memes left in him.
Mm-hmm. I hope so. Well,
and the weekly one for this week, I'm going to go with I'm going to stick with Motley. I'm going to go Mick Mars one. See,
yes. Man, that guy's the picture. Of
health.
Yeah, I know, but you got to go with the safe bet, don't you? Half the most of the time.
Well, guys, let's go. I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
And I'll say peace out.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.